7. Sunny and Honor were making great time. Honor walked quickly because she needed to speak to Bishop Galbraith. She had to tell him what she'd seen in the woods, the wizard, the dragons, and the stolen sheep that seemed to reappear afterward. She had faith that the bishop would know what it all meant. Or he'd know what to do. She never knew her grandfather, but she knew her father, and her father called Bishop Galbraith father. That was close enough for her. Sonny also needed to speak to Bishop Galbraith. His little sister had come back from grazing the sheep, talking about wizards and dragons, and needing to talk to the bishop. Either something had happened out in the woods, she had seen things she didn't understand and she needed help, or nothing had happened in the woods, she had seen things she didn't understand and she needed help even more.
"We should have gone last night,"
Honor said.
Sonny said, "No, I told you. You needed your sleep." "I didn't sleep anyway."
"Yeah, I know."
Runt ran circles around Honor and Sonny at first, excited by the change of routine, or maybe agitated by Honor's state of mind. Whatever the reason, Runt tired herself out pretty fast, and Honor ended up picking up the dog and carrying her. Sonny said,
"One good thing about staying out so early is that Kluge and his gang should still be asleep when we pass their camp."
Honor said,
"Mm-hmm. The walk back might be dicey, but if we keep a distance and don't give them a reason to bother us, we should be fine. They're a rough lot, but they're lazy and they know we have little money, so we're more trouble than we're worth."
Honor chuckled and said,
"Lazy bastards."
"Honor, what have I told you about calling people that?"
"Not to, but that's what they call themselves. It's the name of the gang. Does Kluge and his gang doing something make it all right for you to do it too?" "No, I'm sorry."
"That's fine. An understandable mistake. As you say, they do call themselves that. We just have to be better than them."
Honor asked,
"Why do they call themselves that?"
Sonny said,
"I don't know. They think it sounds tough, I guess.
Or maybe someone called them that and Kluge liked the sound of it. Either way, I think it's really only an accurate description of one or two of them."
Honor walked in the lead, carrying Runt. She rounded a bend in the road that allowed a clear view of Ledchurch in the distance. She looked at the town and thought,
"It won't be hard to convince His Excellency that I saw dragons. All he has to do is look up and he'll see them himself."
Sonny rounded the corner only steps behind her and stopped in his tracks when he saw the dragons flying in circles above the rooftops.
"She wasn't making up stories, and she wasn't imagining things," he thought. "That's good news, I suppose."
Honor said,
"I told you we should have come last night."
Sonny said,
"I'm not sure we should have come today."
Honor resumed walking. Runt barked and squirmed and struggled in her arms.
"Honor, see, even the dog knows we should stay back."
Runt broke free of Honor's grip, hit the ground, and started running straight toward town. Honor ran to chase Runt, and Sonny ran to chase both of them.
"What do you think you're gonna do? I'll tell them what I saw. You saw dragons. They know they're dragons. They can see that for themselves.
But they don't know a wizard is controlling them."
"You don't know that either."
Honor's pace slowed. Sonny thought for a moment that he'd gotten through to her. He caught up to his sister and stopped. In the distance, he saw Runt also stop, looking back over her shoulder at the two humans who were no longer chasing her. Honor kept staring into the distant sky, watching the dragons. Sonny put a hand on her shoulder and said,
"Look, you were right about what you saw. But that does improve. No."
Honor barked.
"You look."
She pointed into the sky.
"I was right about what I saw, and that proves it."
The tiny form of a person floated into the gray morning sky, leading the dragons. It had to be a wizard. Though they were too far away to make out any details, or even identify the color of the wizard's robes. The wizard made some broad gesture toward the dragons, then turned and looked at them for a moment. One of the dragons belched a huge stream of fire which enveloped the wizard, and when the fire had dissipated, the wizard had vanished. The dragon circled one last time, then flew in low along the rooftops of the town, the lead one breathing fire as it went. Sunny couldn't see what damage they were doing, but the round, roiling billows of flame made it easy to imagine.
There. Now you don't need to warn people about the wizards controlling the dragons. After seeing that, they'll know.
Sunny looked at the empty spot where Honor had been standing, then looked ahead to see her sprinting toward town as fast as she could, Runt running just ahead of her. The wizards ran in a group down the middle of the street. The dragons flew single file right at them, following the street's path. For a sick, giddy moment, Martin thought,
"This must be what it's like to be a bowling pin."
Martin realized that his macro was still active.
"Of course, I'm larger and more visible than all of the other pins combined," he thought. "That seems like a bad thing."
Then the lead dragon started blowing fire, and all thoughts of bowling left Martin's mind. The wizards scattered in every conceivable direction, leaving the dragons at a loss as to which wizard they should follow. The dragons rose back into the sky to regroup. The wizards had scattered around the general area, but were still able to talk, thanks to the battle comm. Tyler shouted,
"What have you done, Jeff?"
I'm sorry, I didn't plan any of this,"
Philip cut in.
"Tyler, we're all upset, but there'll be time enough to put a boot up Jeff's arse later."
Roy muttered,
"I'm not so sure. I intend to take my time."
"We have bigger problems right now,"
Philip said.
"We have four dragons, which are impervious to all of our weapons, attacking the town. We have to get them out of here before something terrible happens."
Martin said,
"Dragons are attacking the town. What do you mean, before?"
Gwen said,
"He means that the dragons can't really damage anything. They cause pain, but that's it. One just blew a huge fireball all over a street lined with wooden huts and nothing caught fire. We don't even know if the big one ramming things will damage it. That wall might have only been dented because you were between it and the dragon."
"Exactly,"
Philip said.
"So far the only damage has been to our dignity and our respect for Jeff. But the longer this keeps up, the better the chances are that something genuinely bad will happen."
Britt said,
"I'm sorry to say this, but I think it's already started happening."
The street had been deserted, but now they saw a tight cluster of six or seven men, all armed with swords, spears, and shields. The Lead Church militia had arrived. The horned dragon also seemed to notice the militia, and since a small group of men on the ground make a much more tempting target than a spread-out bunch of hiding wizards, the dragon settled in for another strafing run. The wizards all watched, some of them shouting as they did so, but they were at a loss as to how or even if they should intervene. They couldn't stop the dragons. The dragons couldn't injure the men. If the wizards took actions to stop the dragons from attacking the men, those measures probably wouldn't work and might actually pose a hazard to the men they wanted to save. The dragons flew in a straight line and each attacked the same way in turn. They'd each lead with a massive jet of flame that sprayed out before them like the beam of a motorcycle's headlight. Then as the beast's head passed over the men, their sharp claws and lashing tail would come into play. The men used their shields, which were made of metal, wood, or a combination of the two, to hold back the flames, which did not work. The fire completely enveloped them. The men, however, crouched behind shields with their eyes squeezed shut so they didn't see the flames surrounding them. They felt intense heat and saw an orange glow through their eyelids, but simply assumed that since they survived without any noticeable burns, the shields had worked. Once the fire subsided, they had the claws to contend with, but the dragon's belly hung right above them, exposed and vulnerable. The men tried to use their shields to block the dragon's attack while they flailed with their swords and spears at the dragon's softest target. The talons sliced through the shields and the men as if they weren't even there. Literally, the dragon's feet shoved the men about, but the sharp claws passed straight through them, leaving no marks but a trail of stinging pain. The men swung their weapons as hard as they could, following through as the blades bounced off the passing dragons and were stopped, usually by the body of the man standing next to them. The ghost pain from the talons and the genuine pain from their own swords led the warriors to assume that a toenail or two had gotten past the shields. When the last dragon flew past, they had a moment to look at each other and saw plenty of blood to reaffirm this belief. One of the men said,
"The dragons did their worst, but we're still standing, and we gave as good as we got."
The men stopped groaning long enough to cheer at their own courage. Britt said,
"They gave exactly the same as what they got because they gave it to themselves."
The dragons came back for another run. The militia started groaning again, but they faced the dragons with their shields and readied their blades. Roy said,
"If this keeps up, those poor fools are going to kill themselves."
Philip agreed, but didn't waste time saying so. Instead, he flew into the air and said,
"Chi tiu iras a la dek hunu."
The Esperanto phrase triggered a macro of Gary's that amplified the speaker's voice to near deafening proportions. Gary used it to make embarrassing noises at inopportune moments, but the other wizards often used it as a sort of public address system.
"Friends," Philip said, "lay down your weapons and find cover. Don't attack the dragons. You'll only hurt yourselves."
Runt easily outran both Honor and Sunny, because Runt had the advantage of not having to stop occasionally to wriggle free of the grip of her older brother, or of having to repeatedly grab her little sister. The only thing slowing Runt down was having to stop, turn around, and bark at her two human companions to hurry up. They were nearly to the edge of town now, and Honor had just torn herself free of Sunny's grip for the umpteenth time when she heard the voice. She recognized it instantly as belonging to the wizard in blue, the one Bishop Galbraith considered a friend. He said,
"Friends, lay down your weapons and find cover. Don't attack the dragons. You'll only hurt yourselves."
"See, he's telling them not to fight the dragons," Honor said. "That proves the wizards are behind this."
Sunny grabbed her by the arm again and said,
"Maybe, but that's even more reason to stay away from the whole thing."
Honor kicked Sunny in the shin. He cried out in pain and let go. Honor took off like a shot, shouting,
I'm sorry, but our neighbors are in trouble. I need to warn them."
Sunny shouted,
"Believe me, they know."
The dragon swept down the street, the opposite direction from the way they'd come before. The militia had turned around and was ready for them. The dragons flew over the men, bathing them in searing flames and slashing at them with their claws. The men hid behind their shields until the fire passed, then stabbed wildly with their weapons at the passing creatures' bellies as before. This time Martin saw arrows shoot in from the distance, striking the dragons in the flanks, bouncing off uselessly, and falling point first onto the heads of the swordsmen below. When the fifth dragon had passed, the men were badly bloodied and seemingly still unaware that their wounds were inflicted entirely by their own efforts. Martin said,
"They're killing themselves, and it's our fault."
"No,"
Gary said,
"they're killing themselves, and it's Jeff's fault."
"I'm sorry, okay?"
Jeff shouted.
"What do you want me to do? Go throw myself between them and the dragon?"
Gwen said,
"That wouldn't do any good."
"That doesn't mean I don't want it,"
Gary said.
"It'd be really satisfying."
"This bickering isn't helping,"
Philip shouted. Gary said,
"But it's also really satisfying."
Philip barked,
"Shut up! Does anybody have an idea how to stop this?"
Britt mumbled,
"They seemed spooked by Martin as a giant. Beyond that, I don't know if it'll stop it, but I have something that might help."
She floated in the air, swiping her finger back and forth in space. She and Gwen were citizens of Atlantis and had access to a different interface program. It still linked to the mysterious repository file, just like the program the Lead Church wizards called the Shell, but it had a different set of macros pre-programmed and used a visual interface instead of verbal triggers. Brick glanced up and saw that the dragons were turning around, lining up for another run. She quickly looked back to the menu of options only she could see, muttering,
"Don't look at the dragons, look at the macros. The dragons won't help you, Brit. The macros will. Don't—"
"Got it!"
She stabbed her finger at an option only she could see and pointed her other hand at the men with their shields raised. She spread her fingers and a cone of shimmering white light spread out and bathed them. They took on a glow, which quickly flared, held its blinding intensity for 3 seconds, then subsided. The bright light seemed to spook the lead dragon into aborting its attack. He veered up and away. When the flash faded, the men were slumped on the ground, unconscious. They would have looked rather peaceful if not for all of the armor and weapons and their various injuries. Brit looked relieved. The militiamen laid where they had stood, ready to face the dragons again despite their wounds. She found it odd that she could be so deeply impressed with the valor they displayed while making a mistake. Roy asked,
"So you knocked them out?"
"Much more than that," Brit said. "But there's no time to explain now. Gwen, look up a macro called Medivac Experimental. It's something Louise and I've been working on. It's meant to stabilize injured people and send them to Atlantis."
Gwen said,
"Where there's a real modern doctor instead of a barber with a pet leech." "Exactly. Everyone else, your job is to get these dragons out of here."
Everyone agreed, or at least nobody actively disagreed. So the wizards got to it. They all had their jobs to do, and the unspoken task of figuring out how to do it. Sunny had given up on stopping Honor from running into harm's way, and now just hoped to be there to protect her from harm when she found it. Unfortunately, harm made itself easy to find. They ran up a narrow side street, more of a footpath by modern standards, just wide enough for a single cart to traverse. The street emptied directly onto the main road, the one on which the militia confronted the dragons. In the distance, Sunny saw a wall of flames, followed by a dragon flying just above the roofline. Then he saw 4 more walls of flames, followed by 4 more dragons. As the last dragon passed, Honor reached the junction, ran out into the street, and stopped. She stood, bathed in orange light, watching the dragons with a look of amazement and horror on her face. Runt caught up to Honor and jumped around her feet, yapping. Honor didn't seem to notice. Sunny got to her a second later. He slid to a stop, grabbed Honor's arm, looked for some cover to throw her under, and in the process glanced down the street himself. The dragons flew in the distance, soaring up and to the left in an orderly line. On the ground, he saw a group of men, townsfolk Sunny recognized, though he knew few of their names, men who lived in town and had clearly come out to defend their homes. They looked like they were taking a pretty bad beating, but he couldn't quite tell through the white glow of the spell a female wizard cast on them. Honor recognized the she-wizard as the one in the mask who seemed so friendly with the wizard leader, Philip. The lady wizard floated in midair, shooting her magic from an extended hand. The light from her hand faded, but the men glowed brighter for a moment before they stopped. After that, they just laid on the dusty ground, unconscious or worse, while the she-wizard moved on to other nefarious things. Sunny scanned the area behind them, saw an ox cart parked in front of a hut, and started toward it, dragging Honor as he went.
"She bewitched them!"
Honor shouted.
"I saw," Sunny said quietly.
"They were just defending their homes, and she bewitched them!"
"Yes, I saw."
"Then why aren't you upset?"
"I am very upset, but I'm being quiet because I don't want her to notice that we saw it. Now get under this cart and hush."
"We need to find the bishop."
"No, we need to hide from the dragons."
As he stuffed his struggling sister under the ox cart, Sunny noted that Runt had seen where they were going and was already under the cart waiting for them.
"The small don't survive long unless they learn when to avoid attention,"
Sonny thought as he dove under the cart next to his sister and her dog.
I hope Runt can somehow teach Honor that lesson. I sure seem to have failed at it.
Britt and Gwen had a clearly defined task, to find the injured and hit them with Britt's medevac spell. It stood to reason that any fresh injured would be in the vicinity of the dragons, so they simply fell in behind the last dragon in line and kept their eyes open. The rest of the wizards fanned out, flying above the rooftops, looking for the archers who had added their friendly fire to the previous attack. Any hope that the dragons might just leave died when Gwen said,
"The dragons are coming back for another run. They don't know the swordsmen are neutralized."
Martin, still in his giant form, hovered in midair and watched the dragons settling into the same flight pattern as before. The horned dragon in the lead opened its mouth, but stopped short of breathing fire. Martin waited, planning to rush the dragons when it would startle them most. He watched as the lead dragon cocked its head to the side and studied the unconscious men in the street as it approached. The dragon continued its trajectory but closed its mouth, swiveling its head from side to side looking for a new threat, rather than raining fire on the old threat. Tyler obviously saw the dragon's behavior as well.
Maybe if nobody attacks them, they'll leave on their own.
As if on cue, Martin saw a flash of light in his peripheral vision. He spun in the air and saw five men with bows standing in line near the large stone trough. The light came from the oil-soaked rags wrapped around their arrowheads, which they were hastily lighting with torches. The urge to communicate shot through Martin's brain so quickly that the proper words couldn't keep up.
Arrow guys! Arrow guys with fire!
Most of the wizards figured out what Martin meant, only in time to clarify what they were seeing. As the dragons drew even with the archers, five balls of flame flew in graceful arcs toward the horned dragon in the lead. Martin attempted to throw up a barrier to stop the arrows, but he had too little time and too much adrenaline. The barrier went up just after the arrows had passed. Martin heard some shouting below, but the arrows monopolized his attention as they struck the dragon in the ribs, bounced off uselessly, and fell to the buildings and people below. The lead dragon didn't seem to feel the arrows, but the sight of them spooked the four follower dragons. They scattered while their leader continued down the street. Philip's voice was still being amplified, and he knew it.
"Flaming arrows against fire-breathing dragons? They won't do any good! You're just going to burn the town down!"
Martin looked down. He saw two more injured men, but Gwen would deal with that. He had to prevent more injuries, which would not be easy. At least one arrow had landed on the roof of a hut. In an instant, Martin understood why people seldom fireproof an item by thatching it. He never liked it when Philip was right, and this time was worse than most. Honor pressed in close to Sonny, holding Runt close. The buildings and the ox cart above them restricted their view, but they could see enough, and they heard plenty. One of the wizards shouted,
"Arrow guys! Arrow guys with fire!"
"He's warning the dragons,"
Honor muttered to Sonny.
"Or his friends so they can protect their dragons."
Across the street, a door opened a sliver and Bishop Galbraith poked his head out, looking up to see who yelled. Honor shrieked,
"Father! Father Galbraith!"
The bishop squinted across the street, then shouted,
"Honor! Sonny, what are you doing here?"
Honor cried,
"I need to talk to you."
Before Sonny could stop her, she had run out from under the cart into the middle of the street. He and Runt both clambered after her, shouting her name and yapping madly. Galbraith flung open the door to the hut and dashed out to meet Honor. Behind him, a man, a woman, and a little boy crouched in the darkness. Galbraith grabbed Honor's arm and started to pull her back to the hut. Sonny and Runt were only a step or two behind and were more than ready to follow Honor and Galbraith into the building, but they all stopped when a shadow fell over them. They looked up. and saw an immense horned dragon gliding directly overhead, and the shimmering form of a wizard, made large and radiant by the power of his magic, doing nothing to interfere with the dragon in any way. Then several flaming arrows bounced off of the dragon and fell directly on top of Honor, Sunny, Runt, and Galbreath. To Honor's lasting shame, she dropped to the ground and curled into a ball. To Honor's lasting regret, Sunny and Bishop Galbreath both threw themselves over her. She heard their grunts of exertion, and the bishop saying some very un-bishop-like things after his and Sunny's head collided, making a sound like two rocks banging together. She heard both of them make pained noises, and felt them crawl off her. She rolled onto her back and crab-walked backwards several feet to get some distance. Galbreath had a flaming arrow sticking out of his leg. He beat at it furiously, trying to put out the fire and grunting under his breath as he repeatedly slapped himself at the sight of a fresh arrow wound. Sunny had two flaming arrows protruding from his back. He made no effort to put the fire out. He spent all of his energy rising to a crawling position. He asked Honor if she was hurt. She didn't answer. He told her to get under the cart. She didn't move. She felt a light tugging on her cloak and heard Runt whining through clenched teeth. Later, she would remember angrily that in that moment, even Runt showed more intelligence than she had. Father Galbreath barked,
"Move, girl! Under the cart, now!"
Less than a second later, she was under the cart, but would never have any direct memory of how she got there. The bishop's tone of voice had managed to get through to her nervous system by going around the middleman of her conscious brain. Honor heard the lead wizard, the bishop's friend, say,
"Flaming arrows against fire-breathing dragons? They won't do any good. You're just going to burn the town down."
Honor whispered,
"He's taunting them."
The flame from Galbreath's arrow had died, but tendrils of smoke still rose from the wound. He scuttled over to Sunny and attempted to beat out the flames on the boy's back. Sunny winced in pain, and Galbreath slapped as furiously as he could, until one of the female wizards, the one with the brown hair, who sometimes worked as a tailor for the local farmers, flew by and cast a spell on them. Galbreath and Sunny froze in place, bathed in white light. Then the light flared and subsided. Sunny and the bishop both seemed to be asleep. Aside from breathing, neither of them moved. Honor saw that the fire on Sunny's back was out and the arrows were gone. She thought,
"The wizards are trying to hide what they've done."
Martin turned his attention back to the archers and saw to his horror that they each had a fresh flaming arrow knocked and their bows drawn. He yelled,
"Stop, you idiots! It won't work! I've blocked your arrows anyway! Just go hide somewhere!"
The men didn't listen, instead aiming at a point somewhere off to Martin's left. The archer on the end shouted and they all released their strings. The arrows flew gracefully for 10 feet, then struck the invisible force field. They bounced up and over the backs of the archers, into the buildings behind them. Not one of them seemed to notice. The horned dragon, which landed on the roof of the hut opposite them and looked to be preparing to breathe fire on them, had their undivided attention. The men dove for cover behind the stone trough. Giant Martin spun to face the dragon. He had little time to think, and instinctively resorted to the first menacing action most people learn. He made jazz hands at the dragon and yelled,
"Booga booga!"
The dragon seemed spooked by Martin's display, but instead of fleeing, it attacked. It bathed Martin, every building in sight, and the archers in fire. Or at least tried to. The force field Martin had created to block the flaming arrows also blocked the dragon's flames, creating a flat wall of fire where there would have been a roiling, turbulent cloud of it. Of course, the archers would never know that the force field saved them. They were hiding their faces for protection from the fire that wasn't hitting them. The dragon blew its lungs out, then paused to inhale. One of the archers peeked out from behind the trough, looked at the dragon, then looked behind them. Of course, behind them was another row of closely spaced huts with thatched roofs, which, thanks to the deflected flaming arrows, were now smoldering. The archer cried,
"Much more of this, and the town will be destroyed!"
Martin agreed with this statement. To Honor, it felt like she spent an eternity lying in the dirt, looking at Sunny and the bishop lying in the street, but in reality it took less than 10 seconds for her to snap out of her shock. She scuttled out from under the cart. She grabbed Sunny by the feet and dragged him under. Then she did the same for Bishop Galbraith. They were both breathing, but completely unresponsive.
"There," she thought, "I've made them as safe as I can. Now I have to make myself as safe as I can, because if either of them wakes up and finds out that I let myself get killed, they'll never let me hear the end of it."
The town was in chaos. The dragons had landed and were spewing fire in every direction. The sky buzzed with flying wizards, who seemed to be either egging the dragons on or casting spells on innocent people like her brother and Bishop Galbraith. She asked herself,
"What building in this town is least apt to catch fire?"
And immediately answered herself,
"The Lead Church."
She was unaware of lead's relatively low melting point.
"Also," she thought, "it's God's house. If any place is going to be safe from the wizards, it'll be the church."
She picked up Runt, muttered a quick apology to the two unconscious men she couldn't carry, and took off running for the church. Honor's journey to the church felt like a trek through hell. She witnessed horrors, evil, and cruelty beyond anything her young mind had ever imagined. Fire seemed to be everywhere. The dragons produced gigantic plumes of flame every time they exhaled. Few buildings seemed to be burning yet, but she feared they all would catch fire in time. She thought about her brother and the bishop, lying helpless under the cart, and cursed herself for not being strong enough to carry even one of them. She clutched Runt even tighter and kept moving. She saw a large dragon with curved, ram-like horns, and the enormous silver wizard shining with eerie magical light, making no move to stop the dragons, instead shouting insults at some men cowering behind a water trough. Further down the street, a smaller dragon blocked most of the road, spreading fire over as much of the area as possible. A wizard dressed all in black stood on the dragon's back, feet planted between its giant shoulders. There were countless strands of a stringy mass, like the webbing of an immense, unholy spider, extending from the back of the dragon's head to the wizard's white-knuckled fists. The wizard pulled on the strands with all of his might. Honor had been around animals all her life and immediately recognized the webs, despite their unusual appearance for what they were.
"They're reins," she thought.
"He can steer the dragon and aim its fire wherever he wants."
Honor came to a corner. She looked toward the church and saw only one dragon and one wizard in her way. Many other people seemed to have the same idea because there were many more citizens visible along this street than on the previous one, all moving toward the church. She looked the other way, hoping to avoid being surprised from behind by a dragon or a wizard. Unfortunately, she saw both. The dragon perched on a building, snarling down into the street where several bystanders cowered behind a wizard. He had red and purple striped robes and the darkest skin she had ever seen. She paused to watch, confused. For a moment, it almost looked as if the wizard wanted to protect the people. Then, in a scene that haunted her nightmares for years to come, the wizard turned into a dragon himself. The people behind him screamed, understandably. Honor turned away.
"God knows what those two dragons are going to do," she thought. "But I know I don't want to watch them do it."
She ran for the church, despite the fact that it also meant running toward another dragon and another wizard, which she was beginning to think was even worse. She felt relieved when the wizard, an older man with a strange dirt-colored robe and a hat with a wide brim, flew away, even though he did so with so much speed that she heard a crack and felt the wind he kicked up from far away. The dragon seemed confused. The wizard was gone. The dragon's nostrils twitched. The beast inhaled, shook its head furiously, then singled one man out. Honor immediately recognized Hubert, the dung sifter. The dragon saw Hubert, and Hubert saw that the dragon saw him. As the beast reared its head, preparing to incinerate him, Hubert crouched, curled into a ball, and extended one hand, holding a small idol shaped vaguely like a person, molded out of some brown material. Honor only got a brief glimpse of it before Hubert disappeared from view, completely engulfed in flame. Honor kept running. She had made it past the awful scene and behind the dragon before it ran out of breath and the flames subsided. She didn't want to look, but did so in spite of herself, when she heard Hubert laughing. He stood in the same spot where she'd seen him last, completely unharmed, dancing for joy and holding his idol over his head, triumphantly. In her confusion, Honor stopped and stared at Hubert, trying to make sense of what she saw. Runt barked, snapping Honor out of it just in time to see that the dragon had turned to face her and was taking a deep breath.
Little girl!
Hubert shouted.
Catch!
He drew back his hand to throw the idol, but he never followed through. A beige streak, followed by a deafening boom and a powerful shockwave, blew through, knocking Hubert off his feet, and Honor and Runt back into the wall behind them. Honor dropped Runt to steady herself. The dragon had vanished.
The wizard must have magicked it away, to where it could do more damage, she thought.
Across the street, Hubert sat flat on his backside, looking dazed but still clutching his idol. Honor heard several staccato, insistent barks, and saw that Runt had run ahead toward the church and stopped, waiting for Honor to follow. Hubert came to his senses and shouted,
I'm not hurt! I'm not hurt!
Honor wanted to warn him about the she-wizard in dark blue robes and mask floating in the air above the building behind him. The she-wizard pointed a hand toward Hubert as if preparing to cast a spell. She listened for a moment to him shouting that he was not hurt, shrugged, and withdrew her hand. Then the she-wizard winked at Honor, smiled, and flew away. Honor ran as fast as she could all the way to the church. Runt ran ahead, yapping, as if telling everyone to stay out of Honor's way. They found the door held open by a nun who shouted to everyone within hearing range to get inside where they would be safe. Runt stopped shy of the door, as always, but the nun reached down and pulled Runt inside as Honor dashed in. Almost half of the town seemed to be sheltered by the church's lead cladding, and within the next few minutes, it seemed like the other half of the town joined them. While they were inside the church, the fire could not get to them, and the wizards would not dare try. Of course, thanks to the stained glass windows, all they could see of anything happening outside was the occasional red glow. But most of them were pretty sure they didn't want to see anything beyond that.